CCFM Community Radio for Bristol on 93.2 FM. For more information or to listen live on the internet, go to our website at www.bcfm.org.uk. BCFM, your radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's Starlit Radio Christmas show. Starlit Radio is back on the air for the autumn. The show is coming to you from Bristol City Centre and is part of the Bristol Radio Co-op. Blue Beyond is with us in the studio to perform some of their music, and we also have local musician, BCFM presenter and Barton Hill-based artist John Wisby with us. Tony Gosling has a hot press item fresh off the press, hard-hitting as well, and our reporter Anthea Page sends us an interview all the way from Peru. And Malcolm Grieve continues with another chapter of Cider with Rosie. Jeff Sparks brings us another edition of What's On in and around Bristol and the South West. I'm John Peters Coleman. Well, I've got Blue Beyond here in the studio with us to perform some of their music. Hello. If you'd like to introduce yourselves and sort of tell us what instruments you play.
Okay, my name's Charlie and I play the mandolin and guitar.
I'm Gene and I play guitar.
I'm Mike, I play bass.
And I'm Steve, I sing and play harmonica.
We're now going to hear a piece of music. This is called Life of Love from their album, which is called It's Just a Feeling.
Crazy. Live a life of love and drive you mad.
And that was Life of Love from the album It's Just a Feeling. Eagle-eared listeners, if such a thing exists, will have spotted them before. And Steve told us the story about how you got to perform with Howlin' Wolf. Do any of you other guys have any interesting stories of stuff on the road?
And now he has you.
No. All right, on to the next speaker.
Didn't you have a gig with the Brotherly Sisters?
We had a gig in the reptile house at London Zoo, I seem to remember, a few years back.
Oh, yeah.
All the snakes threw us out.
We thought we were charming some of those snakes.
How long have you been together as a sort of a complete band?
About 50 years, I think.
Probably, yeah. I don't know.
We've been playing together, three of them, not me, have been playing together for about 30, 25 years, haven't you?
Yeah, a long time. More years than we care to remember.
I think in this sort of, it's about 10 years, in fact it is.
10 years.
Yeah.
But Gene and I were introduced by Charlie, and then we started playing, and as we started writing songs, so Charlie and Mike got roped in to do...
They kind of fell in love, you know.
Charlie, do you play the guitar as well as the mandolin?
Yes, I do.
What's
at the same time.
That'd be clever. What do you like about the mandolin? How long have you been playing the mandolin?
Well, not that long, really. I suppose probably about the same length of time as the band comes in. I've only got little fingers. Yeah, I've only got little fingers, and it's good. It's good from that point of view. And it's good for picking out a tune, really. It sort of punches through. It's a bit like the harmonica, you know, because most guitars, you know, it's kind of difficult for it to, if you like, sort of penetrate the rest of the music. But mandolin sort of, if you can play it right, it really comes through, and it's got quite a particular personality, I think.
Do you have like a practice room, or do you go around each other's houses and stuff, or do you practice at all? Yeah, but you're so good. I assume you must do. I mean, you've got a good dynamic together.
Yeah, we practice.
Time to time, if we really have to.
But it's called rehearsal.
We have to bribe certain members to show up.
There's money in it.
I mean, I guess because you've all got your own lives and your own things to do, it must be quite difficult to sort of get together regularly on a the more of you there are, the more difficult it is to get you all together, I guess.
Yeah, but what happens with the songs is the more you play them, the more they take on a life of their own and the more fun it is to play them. And so it becomes its own reward. I enjoy the rehearsals rather more than I enjoy the gigs. Whereas, Michael...
I don't enjoy either.
What gigs are you playing in the near future? Where can people go see you?
We've just had one on Friday, which you would have probably all missed. But... we've got three or four coming up in the new year.
There's one coming up on Friday night.
No, because the studio we're a week ahead.
Ah.
I tried. Good
effort.
That's right. Steve Walcott on Tuesday.
That's interesting. Your interaction with the space time continuum. And now back to the future.
Now we return you.
Do you have a presence on the web at all? Are you high tech?
Yeah.
Where can people go to find out what gigs you've got?
It's not been put up yet. We couldn't avoid having a MySpace space, but we've tried to put nothing on it, just except a picture.
Okay.
But we'll have to fill it in at some point.
Yeah, we're on FaceTube, aren't we?
All right. Well, what's your next? What next song can you play for us?
What about the one about? Four of us in the band are alcoholics and have this constant struggle with demon drink. And this is a country song in that style. Is that okay? Do you feel okay about that? Yeah.
Sun came up this morning, fell across my bed. I woke up with a raging thirst, pounding in my head. I had to close my eyes again. The room was way too bright. There's too many whiskeys chased too many beers down my throat last night. Every time I hit the town, I found I won't get drunk. Once I start to knock him down, fall home like his gun. Nothing seems to matter when I'm on a roll. There's always one more for the road with my old friend alcohol. I've got to stop this drinking before it gets too late. Too many days pass by in a haze. I'd like to see one straight. I got to stop this drinking. It's getting out of hand. And life looks better legless. It's being sober I can't stand. I don't know what it is I really love about the stuff. One drink's one too many, 20's not enough. They say it's not the answer, and I agree, of course. It's just that it helps me to forget what the question was. I got to stop this drinking before it gets too late. Too many days pass by in a haze. I'd like to see one straight. I've got to stop this drinking. It's getting out of hand. Life looks better legless. It's been sober I can't stand. Fell across my bed. I woke up with a raging thirst pounding in my head. I had to close my eyes again. The room was way too bright. Too many whiskeys chased too many beers down my throat last night.
Can you recommend any venues in Bristol or Bath people could go to if you like that kind of music? You know, where do you tend to?
This place is a fairly new one that's opened up, the Thunderbolt on the Bath Road. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of good music there. The Prom has a fairly wide range of stuff.
That's on Gloucester Road. Isn't
that's it? On Gloucester Road, yeah. And the place where we play quite a lot, the Blue Lagoon, aptly named Blue Lagoon, the Blue Beyond.
Are any of you particular fans of Hank Williams? It occurred to me to ask that, listening to that country-esque song about problems with drink.
He's the man.
He's the man. Old Hank, he lived the life and walked the walk, talked the talk.
Died the death.
Died the death. Poor old Hank. No, great, great influence.
All right, well, thank you very much. Thank you very much to Gene on guitar, Stephen vocals, Mike on bass, and Charlie on mandolin. Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
First feature is from Tony Gosling. It's a surprise hard news piece, hot off the press. Take it away, Mr. Gosling.
Well, it's a hard news piece with a difference, John, this week, because rather than boring you with one of my sort of 4 or 5 minute interviews, this week we've got some music, and it's from Brighton, and it's a sort of cover version of the Bee Gees song Staying Alive, and it's by a band called The Freebies.
This is from the old school, new school.
you're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
It's time once again for another chapter of Cider with Rosie, read for and abridged especially for Dialect Radio by the actor Malcolm Grieve.
Cider with Rosie by Laurie Lee. The last days of my childhood were also the last days of the village. I belonged to that generation which saw, by chance, the end of a thousand years' life. The change came late to our Cotswold Valley. It didn't really show itself until the late 1920s. I was 12 by then, but during that handful of years, I witnessed the whole thing happen. Myself, my family, my generation, were born in a world of silence, a world of hard work and necessary patience, of backs bent to the ground, hands massaging the crops, of waiting on weather and growth, of villages like ships in the empty landscapes and the long walking distances between them, of white narrow roads rutted by hooves and cartwheels, innocent of oil or petrol, down which people passed rarely and almost never for pleasure. And the horse was the fastest thing moving. Man and horse were all the power we had, abetted by levers and pulleys. But the horse was king, and almost everything grew around him. Fodder, smiddies, stables, paddocks, distances, and the rhythm of our days. His 8 miles an hour was the limit of our movements, as it had been since the days of the Romans. That 8 miles an hour was life and death, the size of our world, our prison. This was what we were born to, and all we knew at first. Then to the scream of the horse, the change began. The brass-lamped motor car came coughing up the road, followed by the clamorous sharabang. The solid tired bus climbed the dusty hills, and more people came and went. Chickens and dogs were the early sacrifices, falling demented beneath the wheels. The old folk, too, had strokes and seizures, faced by speeds beyond comprehension. Then scarlet motorbikes, the size of 5 barred gates, began to appear in the village, on which our youths roared like rockets up the 2-minute hills, and spent weeks making repairs and adjustments. These appearances did not immediately alter our lives. The cars were freaks and rarely seen, the motorbikes mostly in pieces. We used the sharabangs only once a year, and our buses at first were experiments. Meanwhile, Hugh Ayres, wearing a bowler hat, ran his wagonette to Stroud twice a week. The carriage held 6, and the fare was 2d, but most people preferred to walk. Mr. West from Sheepscombe ran a cart every day, and would carry your parcels for a penny. But most of us still did the journey on foot, heads down to the wet Welsh winds, ignoring the carters, whom we thought extortionate, and spending a long, hard day at our shopping. But the car-shying horses with their rolling eyes gave signs of the hysteria to come. Soon the village would break, dissolve and scatter, become no more than a place for pensioners. It had a few years left, the last of its 1,000, and they passed almost without our knowing. They passed quickly, painlessly, in motorbike jaunts, in the shadows of the new picture palace, in quick trips to Gloucester, once a foreign city, to gape at the jazzy shops. Yet right to the end, like the false strength that precedes death, the old life seemed as lusty as ever. The death of the squire was not the death of the church, though they drew to their end together. He died, and the big house was sold by auction, and became a home for invalids. The lake silted up, the swans flew away, and the great pike choked in the reeds. With the squire's hand removed, we fell apart, though we were about to do so anyway. His servants dispersed and went into the factories. His nephew broke up the estate. Fragmentation, free thought, and new excitements came now to intrigue and perplex us. The first young couple to get married at a registry office were roundly denounced from the pulpit. "They who play by fire shall be consumed by fire," stormed the vicar. "Ye mark my words." Later he caught me reading Sons and Lovers, and took it away and destroyed it. This may well have been one of his last authoritative gestures. A young apologist succeeded him soon. Meanwhile, the old people just dropped away. The white-whiskered, gaitered, booted and bonneted, ancient-tongued last of their world, who thee'd and thou'd both man and beast, called young girls damsels, young boys squires, old men masters, the squire himself he, and who remembered the Birdlip stagecoach. Kicker Harris, the old coachman with his top hat and leggings, blew away like a torn-out page. Lottie Escort, peasant shoot of a Norman lord, curled up in her relics and died. Others departed with hardly a sound. There was old Mrs. Clissold, who sometimes called us for errands. "Ye come up to our court in a minute, squire. I want to do I a mission." One ran to the shop to buy her a packet of bullseyes, and was rewarded in the customary way. Bullseye in cheek, she'd sink back in her chair and dismiss mum with a sleepy nod. "I ain't nur an eightpence about I just now. But Mrs. Crisole will recollect ye." We wrote her off as the day's good deed, and she died still recollecting us. The girls were to marry. The squire was dead. Buses ran, and the towns were nearer. We began to shrug off the valley and look more to the world, where pleasures were more anonymous and tasty. They were coming fast, and we were nearly ready for them. Each week Mrs. Bagnall held her penny dances, where girls' shapes grew more familiar. For a penny one could swing them through the lancers and two-steps across the resinous floor of the hut. But if one swung them entirely off their feet, then Miss B locked the piano and went home. Time squared itself, and the village shrank, and distances crept nearer. The sun and moon, which once rose from our hill, rose from London now in the east. The horses had died. Few people kept pigs any more, but spent their spare time buried in engines. The flutes and cornets, the gramophones with horns, the wind harps, were thrown away. Now wireless aerials searched the electric sky for the music of the Savoy Orpheans. Old men in the pubs sang As I Walked Out, then walked out and never came back. Our mother was grey now, and a shade more light-headed, talking of mansions she would never build. As for me the grass grew longer and more sorrowful, and the trees were surfaced like flesh, and girls were no longer to be treated lightly, but were creatures of commanding sadness, and all journeys through the valley were now made alone, with passion in every bush, and the motions of wind and cloud and stars were suddenly for myself alone, and voices elected me of all men living, and called me to deliver the world, and I groaned from solitude, blushed when I stumbled, loved strangers and bread and butter, and made long trips through the rain on my bicycle, stared wretchedly through lighted windows, grinned wryly to think how little I was known, and lived in a state of raging excitement. The sisters, as I said, were about to get married. Harold was working at a factory lathe. Brother Jack was at grammar school, and his grammar was excellent. And Tony still had a fine treble voice. My mother half knew me, but could not help. I felt doomed, and of all things, wonderful. It was then that I began to sit on my bed and stare out at the nibbling squirrels, and to make up poems from intense abstraction, hour after unmarked hour, imagination scarcely faltering once, rhythm hardly skipping a beat, while sisters called me, sons rose and fell, and the poems I made, which I never remembered, were the first and last of that time.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
Tarapoto straddles the base of the Andean foothills and the edge of the vast jungles of eastern Peru. A sweltering rainforest metropolis, it dips its toe into the Amazon basin while managing to cling to the rest of Peru by a long paved road back to civilization. Our reporter Anthea Page met Cindy Ray Tigui and Ray Brutton, two Peruvians from Tarapoto, who are trying to save the rainforest there and the area around Mount Pucallpa in eastern Peru.
Hello, my name is Cindy Ray Tigui. I'm from Tarapoto. It's in the forest of Peru.
Hi, my name is Ray. I'm a guide of tourism in Peru.
Right now, we are working in the, to make a project to private area for conservation.
What we're trying to do is to help this area from the people that are cutting the trees. What we are doing right now is working with the people in the tourist business, helping to clean the area and for maintaining.
This area is in the north of Peru, near Brazil, isn't it?
Yeah, this area is the north of Peru, which is close to Ecuador and Brazil. You can get there from Lima. It's like a plane 1 hour to get to Tarapoto City, that is in the province of San Martin. And from there you take a bus, like 2 hours, to a Sauce town. And from a Sauce town you walk approximately like 3 hours to get to Paucariacu area, that is the mountain that we are trying to preserve.
And it's like rainforest, isn't it?
It's a high rainforest.
Can you tell us a bit about the animals that are under threat? What sort of animals?
Well, the animals that are in danger in this area are the jaguar, the black jaguar, that is not so common now, and the bears. We have bears too, and well, all of the birds and mammals that include in the area, you know. But these two are in danger.
And is because people want to deforest the area to cut the trees, big yes. Companies.
Yeah, that's the reason we heard about the Oxy Petroleum Company getting close to this area. So we are afraid they were trying to get into the area and study the area for petroleum. So, but I recently heard is that the government have the priority in your lands if they found any kind of resource to take advantage of. So what we are afraid if really we have petroleum in this area, this company are trying to get closer and get to the area. We own this land and we hope the government don't give this preference to the companies.
Give them permission.
The permission, right.
Right. So this will affect local people as well, will it? Are there local people who depend on the forest for their work?
Right. The local people, they have their farms, they are hand and everything. All with them is okay, you know. If they don't cross the limits, you know, if they live with the nature and involved with it, and you know, everything healthy. But if they maybe if these companies come and they don't have anything to preserve, their only resource will be cutting trees, no more tourism. So what we're trying to make is a balance with the tourists, so make them not to cut the trees all the time. Maybe they can get another reserve for money.
So do you think if you could get more tourists to come, you could save it from destruction?
Mm. All in the limit, you know, everything you have to be balanced, like everything, you know.
So do you have a website?
We do have a website. I will spell it for you. It's www.lapatarasha.com.
And if people log on, they can find out how to get to this place and where to stay and what to see.
Well, the visits for this place are not commonly, you know. But this webpage would get you in touch with us, because this is the place that we have in town, our business. But if you can ask specifically for this area, and we will take you there if you want to help in any way. We need any kind of help to make a, by example, we need to make a recognition of all the species, trees and the animals, make accounts, you know, so we can then ask a petition to make an area, a private area for to conserve, because right now we're trying to do that. We're not an area, a private area for conservative, but we're trying to do that. So we need these little helps, are very big for us, you know. Somebody can tell us how many species, or maybe to calculate it, or animals, what, so we can present the paperwork to the government.
Brilliant. Well, I hope you have every success in your venture.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
Thank
your help.
Thank you.
That was Cindy Retegui and Ray Brutton talking to our reporter, Anthea Page, in Lima. Thank you, Anthea. John Wisby is here with us in the studio to talk about his life in music, the radio and arts. Hello, John.
Hello. Yeah.
All right, well, we've already had a little taster of what kind of a guy you are. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I'm a musician, broadcaster, artist, dabble with sort of like writing and jack of all trades, master of none, really.
Okay, but you're a full-time band manager, I understand, of a band called Alien.
No, I'm the guitarist.
Oh, sorry,
I'm
lead
singer. Sorry, lead singer. I'm lead singer. I do play a little bit of lead, but mainly lead singer.
Sorry, I'm looking at Jeff. That's why he's you're the manager. Give him the finger. Look at that. Sorry, you're the guitarist for a band called Alien Stashton, and that's your main love in life.
It's one of my main loves in life. So, you know, I have many sort of too much fun, I'm too long here to get bored, so I like doing lots of things.
Okay. How did you get first involved with music? How long have you been involved in music?
I started out when I was about 15. I lived in London at the time, and a friend of mine, his older brother, was in a band, a punk band called The Victims, and they were god-awful. as many of the punk bands in the late 70s were, you know, but I went to see them play this gig at a little local community centre, and I saw them getting paid 30 quid at the end of the night.
Yeah.
Yeah, 30 quid amongst a four-piece band, that's about 7 quid each, isn't it? And I was chatting to one of the guys, and he said, well, you play drums. He said, well, you know a couple of chords on the guitar, don't you? I said, yeah, the bloke in the other class who's got a bass, and we formed a band. And then never looked back.
What are your first memories of music? Going back to childhood, if you can rack your brains, what are your first memories and feelings about music?
When I was born, Beatles were number one, with She Loves You. She Loves You, yeah. And it was on the radio nearly constant when I was in the maternity hospital.
Yeah.
As a little baby. And it got to the point where, when they took me home, I wasn't sleeping. And then my mum noticed that every time they had the radio on and that particular Beatles song came on, I went to sleep.
So not a great advert for the song, mate.
So my father went out and brought a single of that particular track, and he's put it on the old dance set record players where you could have it on constant repeat. With like Lucy Got to Sleep with the Beatles playing in the background, and even before I knew what the song was, I knew all the lyrics.
Is that single? Do you still have that single? Or is
not
it
that copy disappear? Anymore. I have the single, but the copy's long since disappeared.
Do you like the Beatles particularly?
The Beatles, not one of my favourite bands, but I respect them and admire them for their musicianship and what they've done for the world of rock and roll. Yeah.
What bands have you come to most respect in your past being in music?
Probably the band I respect most, as far as kind of attitude and outlook, is probably Hawkwind. I just love the kind of, I'm not going to swear because it's, but that kind of the system, we're doing it our way. Hawkwind always ploughed their own furrow.
Mm.
Always admired that. And then for sort of like musicianship, I don't know if you've ever heard of a band called Bullet Cult.
Yes.
Superb band. I mean, okay, everyone thinks Don't Fear the Reaper, but they've done 17 fantastic albums. And there's probably not a duff track on any of them. You know, so they're probably my two biggest influences, the Hawkwind kind of stuff and the Blue Oyster Cult kind of.
When did you first move to Bristol?
I've been in Bristol, about this, November the 4th, 1984, me lover. I came to Bristol.
What bands have you been involved in that time?
Well, since I came to Bristol.
Mm.
I was in a band called Covenant. Some people may remember us as well, because we used to gig supporting people at Onslaught and the Amoebics and Ripcord. Those are people that do remember the old sort of underground thrash metal scene of the mid-1980s, might remember Covenant. Mm-hmm. We were never achieved much. We got signed up, but nothing ever came of it. And then after that, I was in a band called Beowulf, and we were sort of like big on the Red... Not big, but on the Redland circuit. There was a lot of bands coming out of Redland at the time, because that's where all the students and hippies lived.
Yeah.
And again, we played with bands like the Herb Garden and Claytown Troop and those sort of bands. And we did a lot of the sort of Travellers festivals and Travellers parties, etc. And then went on from there on to... and then I decided to take 10 years out, and then Amy Sashin came together, so...
Okay, what was the big 10 years about? What happened in that decade? What led you to that decade?
I just got bored.
Just got bored.
I just couldn't find it. I thought I was getting a bit tired, and I just didn't fancy spending all my life playing covers and like strangling to death in the numbers in sort of like the because engine you were. So I hit it on the head, and was looking for sort of like the right band, effectively. There's a few abortive starts in there. You know, a couple of bands came together. A couple of them almost got to the gigging stage, but then fell apart for various reasons.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a case of looking for the right people playing the right kind of music, because I'd done enough of sort of like, they're trendy and up various bands, so that was it.
Well, you've had some success with Alien Sebastian. I understand that the late glorious John Peel, bless him, played one of your songs. How did that come about?
I don't know. We did a track called Camperman of Love many years ago when the band first formed in 2003, so many years ago. But for a guy that was organising kind of East Barton Hills sort of area, this is the sounds of the area type kind of compilation CD. And then the lineup changed drastically after that. And this guy turned up for audition, who's Dave Seawood, who's our current lead guitarist. Oh, he said John Peel played you a couple of weeks back, and I yeah right. And then we found the set list, because he's published a set list online, and yeah, sure enough, he was played on the John Peel show once.
So you've become a little bit more sort of successful over the last 10 years, and you're happy with the Alien Stash, and you come back to music. What is your experience of the music industry over the past?
Music industry sucks. It's full of sharks and rip-off merchants, and I recommend anybody to get involved with it.
I can't say I'm really much surprised. Give some sort of examples.
Without mentioning names, there's even now, there's two quite venues in Bristol, which I'm not going to mention names, because I don't want Radio Dalek to get sued, that will promise you the earth if you play there, and you just find it's a field of tears, because you'll get you won't get your gig fees as promised. You'll find yourself shunted on the sort of like weird bills on unacceptable days. There's certain days that are better for playing live than others.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy that runs it is just interested in the old muller in his pocket and not the people. It's a shame, because it is supposedly one of Bristol's leading venues, and a lot of young bands play there. But I do my own radio show on BCFM.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of bands that come in saying about this certain venue, they ripped us off. You know, it's almost like a mantra. Don't play the, because we'll stitch you up.
Okay. What favourite venues do you have in Bristol?
I love the Area 81 Club at the Packhorse. That is superb. It's a little angels round. It's a no, almost four again, but it's a no kind of hassle atmosphere. The beer's cheap. The music's great. You can get a good live sound in there. And it's just got a good ambience. It's a good place to go and play and let you're in there and have a party. Both to play and to see bands is good as well.
Do you feel that you're part of a healthy music scene in Bristol?
Music scene sucks. Bristol music scene is either about trip-hop or it's about trying to impersonate the latest indie sound. There are lots of good bands in Bristol, but none of them get any you notice in Bristol, they all have to play out of town. If you're a rock, if you're sort of a heavy rock band or a metal band or anything in Bristol, you know, you're going to be complete unknowns and accept it. I mean, one of Europe's biggest thrash metal bands is a band called Onslaught from Bristol. Jeff probably knows better than I do, but I think I've only played Bristol twice in the last 15 years.
Yeah, I know Burning Skies are also very big elsewhere, and especially around Europe. You never see them play here.
Jeebo, another great example. Mm. But these guys play at the Royal Albert Hall, yet they can't get a gig at the Fleece and Firkin.
So what's going wrong?
It's because it's the car sales of certain promoters and venue managers that are only interested in booking tribute bands on key nights of the week. Friday and Saturday night is when people go out to see bands.
Yeah.
But if you want to build a following, you've got to play in town on those nights. These days, the Bunch of Grapes, the Fleece and Firkin, all the key venues are tribute bands only. People try to sort of like do third-rate Bon Jovi clones.
Hmm.
Original talent is not getting a look in, so therefore, for the original talent to get gigs on those nights, they've got to go out of town.
And to prove your point, there is a Bon Jovi cover band playing on the Friday in the Fleece and Firkin, which is exactly as per
your example. Well, if I go there and there will be shotgun, they won't be, but never mind.
Of all the bands you've shared stages with, either as a headliner or a supporter, you must have some interesting experiences. We interviewed a band called Hacksaw.
Hacksaw.
And they wound up supporting house DJ Daniel Rampling at a corporate gig, which is extremely strange. What interesting experiences or enjoyable ones have you had with other bands?
Well, I stole Buster Blood Vessel's beer stash from Bad Manners.
Oh, wicked.
When we played with them at a festival, this was Alien Slash, and when we played with them in Respect in the West Anti-Racism Festival 2003.
Was he
quite
upset about that?
No, he was quite informed. He said, help yourself, guys. And we probably only went like a couple of times. We just loaded up and he just went, you cheeky beep beep beeps, and had a laugh. We sort of like going with Snashton, we had the privilege of playing with Dumpy's Rusty Nuts, who any sort of like person who knows their underground rock scene will know Dumpy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fantastic experience because Dumpy's Rusty Nuts recorded their live album, Firkin Will Live, at the Fleece of Firkin in 1989.
Yeah.
And I was in the audience. And then 10 years later, or was it, it was 20 years afterwards, or however long years it was,
yeah,
I'm on stage playing, supporting the band. It's great.
So if the music industry sucks, how are you getting around promoting yourselves?
Because these days, with a band, you don't need the music industry anymore. You can promote yourself. You can, there are venues that don't suck, I hasten to add, including ones in Bristol, like Area 81, but with MySpace and the web, you can record, and with modern computer technology, you can record an album on the cheap. It doesn't cost you a vast amount to get it professionally pressed. You can distribute it yourself, either at gigs or local record shops will take it or whatever. You don't need the record company and Mr. 10% that's coming in, getting the fingers in your pies.
Yeah.
If there was a few more promoters, there are a couple in Bristol and sort of like other places like Birmingham that are good. A few more people like them and get rid of a few of the jerks, then, you know.
This does work. I mean, in a different genre, the Arctic Monkeys only came around to be successful in the first place, all entirely by word of mouth on the internet via MySpace.
That's a debatable point. They did have a management company behind them that was giving that word of mouth out.
Okay.
They were in negotiation with record labels before they started the big internet push.
Okay.
So, don't believe the hype. It's the same with that girl that's supposed to have done gigs in her living room and got huge. I want to be a punk with flowers in the air.
Oh,
again, yeah. Record company was involved before she got big, and it's part of the marketing hype.
Okay, yeah. So how are you finding it? How easy are you finding it to become more successful with using the internet? I mean, there is a mainstream media, obviously, that you have to... I don't know, break into if you want to be really successful.
Well, I don't want to be successful. I mean, I don't want to be sort of like play huge stadiums. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the bands that are the best are the underground acts,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I would rather play to sort of like 50 people in a small pub in the back end of Devon that are there because they like your music and you're entertaining them,
yeah.
Than 5,000 people at some great big concert hall in the middle of Sheffield. That are there because you're the latest trendy thing that's been in NME.
Yeah.
I just don't like the hype and the commercialism and the capitalism of it all. So I'd rather be a cult hero than a megastar.
Okay. You do your Sunday rock show for BCFM. How did you get involved with them?
I was involved with Radio 19, the precursor, sort of like restricted broadcast license station. And it was only because, like, somewhat because I used to work on the community newspaper for Barton Hill. And I was writing this article, would be interested. So not only did I write the article, I went off to meet myself. No, I like rock. Okay, come do a rock show, an hour a week, just me and a load of old dusty LPs. And then I did about three or four broadcasts on that, over three or four times we were on air. And then the parents, and then when it was Radio 19 team in conjunction with the Commonwealth FM team,
yeah,
put in a successful bid for the community licence, it was a case of, do you want a show on BCFM?
Yeah.
So I just changed the format slightly to do new bands as well as old. And, every Sunday night at 10 p.m.
I understand you're involved in art projects with the Barton Hill community. What do they consist of?
Yeah, well, I say it's not Barton Hill community. What it is, we've got an arts collective that a group of us has set up. I'm not the organiser of that. I'm just sort of like one of the artists that are involved. There's a woman called Tanya Helmut, talented German. She's a conceptual artist and sculptor. And she lives in the Barton Hill, Lawrence Hill area. And we started out wanting to do something nice to sort of like spruce up a rather dull railway bridge, which is on Dorsey Road,
okay,
on Lawrence Hill. And we sort of like knocked on a few doors and managed to blag some funding from a few sources. And basically we spent £14,000 and about 8 months putting what is actually Bristol's biggest open public mosaic along both sides of this bridge parapet. We did it in a way that involved as many people in the local community as possible. We coordinated the project and we did the overall design, but the details within the design we let the local people do, so you got a coherent whole with the thing. And that was really successful. It sort of like made a local TV and that at the time. And then we really enjoyed working together as a team, and people kept saying, well, when are you doing the next project? So we decided to carry that on. Yeah. We did a graffiti workshop for children in Gauntown Park in Lawrence Hill last year. And we currently sort of like got a few other ideas on the back burner whilst we surf around looking for funding and sort of like backing, so we can make some of these ideas more mosaics on bridges and public sculpture and that we're looking at. So
if people want to get involved, how can they get in touch?
Look at Barton Hill Artists Collective on MySpace. There's a page on there, and they can just contact us via that, and we can take it from there.
Do you ever come into contact with any other sort of artistic groups in Bristol? I'm thinking of the People's Republic of Stokes Croft have a lot of artistic...
I did help paint part of Stokes Croft. There was a friend of mine going past, and we got chatting. It was a case of, oh, hold this ladder. Hang on a minute. Do you want to paint that while I do this? And the next thing, we ended up painting the front of a shop. But not at the moment, because we're kind of still in that kind of forming stage.
Okay.
And... like I said, it's at the moment the way that everything's sort of like in Barton Hill, you can't do anything really without council backing, because they've got this inner city redevelopment area, you know. And if we went out and did a guerrilla work, like a Banksy or what you call it, there's no point in us doing it, because they'll just come along, because this has got to be this nice government regeneration area. It will just be painted over within hours. So we've got to jump through the right hoops. But the Community at Heart regeneration project ends next year. So after that, the lead's off.
All right. Does Alien Stashed In, just talking back to that, have a web presence? What is the address?
We do. www.myspace.com/AlienStashedIn.
So nobody else happened to have that MySpace address then? What a surprise. I understand you have a song for us to listen to. Can you briefly explain who it's by, what it's called?
The BCFM Sunday Rock Show, we have every year an album of the year. It's either a self-released album, an album on a small indie, i.e. with a roster of less than 10 bands,
yeah,
or an album that's only available on import in the UK. And one of the albums that's out for the contention this year is from an Austrian band called Dignity. And it's basically you're about to hear them doing a cover of a Christa Berg track called Don't Pay the Ferryman. Well, no, I think it's rather kin awesome. So, please enjoy.
Thank you very much to John Wisby. And your show on Sunday, what time?
It's 10 p.m. Sunday nights, repeated 10 a.m. Monday mornings.
All right, this is Dignity, thank you. Is here with us for another edition of What's On.
Thank you, John. Good evening. This is your What's On guide from Dialect Radio. If you want to venture out on Christmas Eve, then head on down to Mr. Wolf's in Bristol for a night headlined by Emily Breeze. Support comes from the John E. Vistick Experience and also Howlin' Lord. Doors open at 8 p.m. and entry is £3 on the door. Moving on to Saturday, 27th of December, and at the Prom Bar in Bristol, The Bones will be performing. Doors open at 8 p.m. and entry is £4 on the door. On to a song of the week, and this week I present a group called Foxborough Hot Tubs. They formed in December 2007 and to date have released one album and two singles. This is the song Stop, Drop and Roll from the album of the same name. Foxborough Hot Tubs with Stop, Drop and Roll. For more information, you can check out Foxborough, that's Foxboro, foxboroughhottubs.com. You can also check out their side project, who are known as Green Day. Moving on to New Year's Eve, and at Comedia in Westgate Street in Bath, Babyhead will be performing with support from the Zen Hussies and Little Rock. Doors open at 8:30pm and tickets are £15 in advance. Also on New Year's Eve, G Baby I Love You will be performing at the Thunderbolt in Bristol. Doors open at 7pm and tickets are £7 in advance and £10 on the door. Finally on New Year's Eve, and at the Reckless Engineer in Bristol, Reckless Empathy Don't Bounce will be performing. This group features Skin from First Element, Carl from Crossfire and Phil from Goldfish Don't Bounce. Doors open at 8pm and tickets are £10 in advance from the venue. That is all from me. Thanks for listening and have a good week. Take care and goodbye.
Thank you very much to Jeff. Next week and the week after, we've got a couple of Christmas specials, but we'll be back to normal programme on the 13th of January 2009, Tuesday the 13th. Well, that's the end for this week's Dalek Radio Show from the Bristol Radio Co-op, based here in the city centre, right by Queen Square. Today's studio guests were Blue Beyond and John Wesby. Our features were brought to us by Dialect Radio reporters Tony Gosling and Anthea Page. Malcolm Grieve read another instalment of Cider with Rosie, to be continued next week, and the What's On was presented by Jeff Sparks. Phyllis Tripp-Curran was the studio engineer. This week's show was produced by Jeff Sparks. You can download the show on the internet at www.dialectradio.co.uk. So it's goodbye from all of us here at Dialect Radio, and I hope you have a very good Christmas and a Happy New Year. Goodbye from me, John Peters-Coleman. Take care.